Ebook readers may soon have more than 500 million reasons to like a pair of rulings in Judge Denise Coates' courtroom this week, and the copyright conversation gets interesting. Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. My name is Chris Keneally for Beyond the Book. Every week on Friday, we turn to Publishers Weekly senior writer Andrew Albanese for a look at the very latest news in the book business, and he joins me now from PW's Manhattan Newsroom. Welcome back, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
Well, it's good to talk to you, and we saw you yesterday. We'll get to that in just a minute, but we'll start with some news from Capitol Hill. And copyright sort of took to the hill this week with the Authors Guild telling Congress about what it thinks should happen in a copyright overhaul.
Yeah, that's right. You know, as we've discussed on this program a few times before, Congress has been angling towards some kind of copyright reform and holding hearings. And yesterday, Jan Constantine delivered testimony on behalf of the Authors Guild. And in that testimony, you won't be surprised to know anyway, that she relitigated the Authors Guild's failed cases against Google and the HathiTrust. And interestingly, of course, she really neglected to mention the outcome of either of those two legal cases in that testimony. You know, probably our listeners know Jan Constantine pretty well. And Chris, I know you probably know Jan, but she's a skilled lawyer and a first-rate advocate. And as a position statement, the testimony that she submitted to Congress was pretty much what you'd expect. She slammed what she called an ad hoc approach to mass digitization of books. And also she, you know, slammed the so-called Orphan Works program that the HathiTrust had undertaken. And she spoke about quote-unquote copy shocks delivered by new tech companies like Google. For the most part, her testimony followed the legal arguments made against Google in their cases, and she suggested that compulsive licensing was really sort of a solution there. But what really caught my attention in reading the testimony was that she downplayed the difficult issue of orphan works. You know, she told the committee that, you know, it really isn't so hard to find copyright owners, but I'm not sure that that's actually true. And I think part of the confusion may be that, you know, she's right. It may be easier than ever with the internet to find authors of works, but actually establishing who the owner of that copyright is in order to make another use of that work is a pretty different story altogether, especially given the Copyright Act's changing requirements over the years. So, of course, the testimony is almost exactly what you'd expect, but what really struck me is, you know, how out of step it is, too. And that's that, you know, the rest of the world has really moved on from this Google issue, from book scanning and all of this, you know, backlist works. And, you know, here the AG had a real chance to step up to Congress and deliver testimony on what the future should look like. And yet they chose to relitigate a battle that they've lost, and actually lost pretty badly so far. And, you know, talk about a scanning program that not one but two courts have already said does not harm authors and indeed helps them. So I really just sort of see it as a blown opportunity to sort of weigh in on how the future really should unfold in a more positive fashion. But as our listeners probably know, those Google cases are both on appeal. So who knows what the future truly holds, although one thing we do know is that copyright reform probably isn't going to happen anytime soon. And also, I couldn't help but note how different the testimony was from Jan Constantine and the Authors Guild delivered on the same day that the On Copyright event was held in New York City. And, you know, that event, I think, really focused very much on market solutions and market reality and in a pretty positive fashion.
Well, of course, you know that Copyright Clearance Center sponsored the On Copyright conference that you speak of. So I'll just step back here and let you tell us what you thought.
By all means. And you can read my coverage on the PW website of the event. Here's my big takeaway from the event yesterday. And that's, you know, wow, how things have changed. And really, in just a few short years, you know, from 2008, when the first event was, and when the Google issue was sort of the big issue, to 2014, you really could see a marked shift in the program of the way we sort of moved from warily approaching what digital means to copyright holders to how market solutions are really having an impact. You know, where we used to talk about how things might change, this year was a real dose of reality and how the world works now. You know, to that end, I thought Robert Levine as a host was great. And he made a great point at the outset that I'm going to be stealing and quoting for some time now. And that's that, you know, you see that Netflix and Spotify and all these other digital platforms are now actually funding the creation of original content. You know, remember, for so long, for the last few years at least, YouTube was the poster child for these digital platforms and how nobody was getting paid for them. You know, well, as Levine noted yesterday, these new platforms can really spark competition for creative work. work, and that they're now funding all this original content could really prove to be, in his words, a race to the top for content creators. And, you know, while he acknowledged that a lot of content creators may not be satisfied with the terms these new services are offering, that can change. As he noted, you can negotiate with Spotify, but you can't negotiate with the Pirates Bay. I also really liked the panel on innovation from the morning, and I really think Jeff Jarvis's idea that we need new legal and technical regimes to encourage new models is pretty much spot on. But also, as he said, it still is really too early to know what those regimes should look like exactly. That's an excellent point, and now I wish Jarvis would submit his testimony to Congress. And indeed, maybe we should submit this whole panel's talk to Congress, because where the Authors Guild focused this week was on sort of maintaining a level of control from previous generations. The panel I'm speaking of yesterday really cautioned against protecting old models in such an exciting new world. So between the two views, I think there probably must be a happy medium, though that's probably going to be years and years away.
Well, it's great to hear you talk about it that way. We're glad you got a lot out of on Copyright 2014. We'll make sure to link to the video of the whole day's program that we have available for everyone, and so they can go there or go directly to oncopyright2014.com to see what Andrew was talking about. But speaking of waiting, we're going to be waiting for copyright reform for a few years, as you suggest. There has been no more waiting in two significant developments in the Apple case. We've had rulings from Judge Denise Coate that consumers should start looking forward to.
That's right. But, you know, they might not want to start counting their money anytime soon. But we'll go back. Two big developments. Right after we spoke last week, Judge Denise Coate handed down two key rulings in the damages phase of Apple's ebook price fixing case. And one ruling, the judge granted class action status in the two outstanding state and consumer cases. And in another decision, the judge rejected Apple's two expert witnesses for the damages trial. Now, those rulings are a double whammy for Apple. In one stroke, they paved the way for the consumer classes to class actions to continue, and at the same time, they all but knocked out Apple's defense. So let me explain it what this means this way. The damages trial was basically going to be a one, possibly two-day affair in which expert witnesses are going to testify about, well, you know, damages from the alleged conspiracy among the publishers and Apple. But now that Apple's experts have been essentially knocked out, its two main witnesses, that's economists Joseph Kalt and Jonathan Orsag, both have been barred from presenting their opinions. And so in her written opinion, you know, Coate really took apart those findings. She basically found them fundamentally flawed and held that they would only serve to confuse or in some cases mislead a jury. So boom, they're gone. What does this mean? Well, I've been saying for some time, at least the last couple of weeks here, that there's a chance that there might not be a damages trial, that Judge Coate would actually decide this in a summary judgment. And now I put those odds at 50-50 or better. But I also think the chances are even better that we're going to see some kind of a directed or partial verdict on damages here. And here's why. In her ruling, Judge Coate did say that Apple's witness could testify on one narrow thing, and that's a rerunning that he did of the plaintiff expert's damages model. And in that rerunning, Apple's witness, Jonathan Orsag, came to an estimate of damages that was only slightly lower than the plaintiff's expert. So what that tells me is the judge could very easily use Apple's running of the plaintiff's model as a floor, since that's the one thing he's going to be allowed to testify to. And thus, the rest of the action could be merely to decide how high the damages could go above that floor. And for the record, in filings, that floor is just under $700 million after trebling. When you subtract the publisher's $166 million from the total potential award, you're looking at an award of in the neighborhood of $540 million or so at the low end. But as I say, don't count your money just yet. Apple is surely going to appeal class certification. And there's a very good chance that the case is going to be stayed until the appeals court actually reviews Judge Coate's order to certify the class. Briefs are due next week on that. So as they say, check this space.
Well, and check this podcast. We'll have much more, I'm sure, next week and in coming weeks from our colleague and friend, Andrew Albany, senior writer at Publishers Weekly. Andrew, thanks for joining us on Beyond the Book.
My pleasure, as always.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow us on Twitter, find Beyond the Book on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at the Copyright Clearance Center website, copyright.com. Just click on Beyond the Book. Our engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.